Tonight, we have Chris Miller, author of sci-fi and horror, crime, mystery, thriller, on with us. Very happy to have you. We've been talking about posters already.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for having me on. I even do comedy once in a while.
Comedy?
I got to throw that out there. I've got a total toilet humor short story out there. Make you gag, guaranteed.
Oh, toilet humor.
But it's like highbrow toilet humor.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I love it.
Since we're on comedy, do you ever do stand up?
No, but I should, especially when I'm drunk. But I'm not drunk, so.
I think everybody says that.
Yeah, no, I am absolutely fantastic at it, but I don't get paid for it. It's the same thing with writing. I'm good at that, and nobody pays me for that either, so.
Yet.
That is the operative word. I'm still waiting on Netflix to call.
Well, you know what? Everybody starts somewhere. You know, one of my favorites right now is, who's that guy? As soon as I go to my Facebook, I'm sure I'm going to see his face because he's on tour now.
Matt Rife?
Yes! Thank you!
Yeah, yes. My friend Sarah was showing me stuff of him yesterday, and I see him everywhere online now.
Yes, Matt Rife. And for the last year, I have been watching him, and I've been saying, man, if he ever tours here, I want to go to one of his shows. And now, you know, it's like the tickets, they're snapped up fast. But yeah. Chantel, have you seen any of Matt Rife's stuff? No, I'm going to have to send you some clips.
It's amusing.
Yeah.
Chair might break, just FYI.
My
chair might break at some point. I leaned back and it popped. So
if
I go tumbling out of the picture, y'all just carry on.
That'll make for a really good clip.
Hopefully it'll be like
that should be the
right
thumbnail,
when we say something
actually,
funny.
Right?
You gotta make sure your legs go up too.
Like I'm gonna get my feet up in the air and everything. You know, just go nuts with it.
Yeah. Do you like Dave Chappelle?
Oh, he is my absolute goat. He's my favorite, period.
He's going to be here, too. He's on tour, too.
Is he?
No way.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be a good show.
I want to say July, maybe?
Of course. When we're busy.
Of course it's in July.
If I'm not mistaken.
Three of us will be at Texas AuthorCon.
It's not that same weekend, though. It's like the 24th, I think. 24th, 25th of July.
Like the next weekend.
You know what? Don't hold me to that date, but I think. Or was it September? No, September. Corey Taylor's coming back here in September. Okay. Anyway, so we go to the Improv quite often. So I've had a chance to see Bill Bellamy.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Davidson was the last one. The Wayans, that's Marlon Wayans, Damon Wayans. Do you ever go to the Improv?
I've never been to them. I actually live out in the sticks. I'm 2 hours from Dallas in the woods.
Wow.
So I don't have access to a lot of that kind of stuff. I have to plan a whole weekend or trip for that.
Knowing where you live, now I have questions.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of meth here, and yes, there's a lot of rednecks. I promised.
I was thinking more like ghosty things, creepy bugs, and possibly Bigfoot. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, you see more of that on meth, actually. It's a good place to be if that's what you're looking for.
Fair.
I'm kidding. I don't do meth.
Yeah, I was going to tell you that you could probably talk to the people at Secret Group because I know they have comedians come on even.
That's true.
Or stand up. But if you're all the way over there, you don't want to come over here for that, probably.
Nobody wants to see me.
I'll just be funny in the show.
I'd have to get half hammered before I went out. Yeah, that's the only way I'd handle it.
I have recently really had an appreciation for comedians because the skill that it takes to get up in front of people and make them laugh.
And it's all you. It is all on your shoulders. There's nobody with a snare drum and a cymbal that's going to save you.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody that's going to be able to run out and like take over. You know, if you fall on your face, it's all on you. It's all on you.
It's kind of like that as a writer, though.
That's got to be the scariest thing in the world.
I mean, don't y'all think it's like that as an author, too?
But it's not immediate. It's not immediate. Like,
it's not immediate. Yeah, yeah. And we have the benefit of being, you know, having a separation. You know, we're not there on the stage in front of an audience. You know, we're behind a screen here, and we're interacting with our audience, you know, after the fact, and after we've had the chance to polish this and get it just right, where the comedian, he's got to be on his feet. He's got to stay on time. And then if somebody starts heckling you, what do? You know, can you ignore it, or do you need to dive in? And are you going to be funny, or are you going to make yourself look like an ass? I got mad respect for comedians.
Throwing knives aren't a thing. You can't throw some knives.
No. Well, you can, but it's frowned upon in polite society.
That's so rude. We're authors.
Matt Rife is really good with his crowd work too. Like,
that's what I was noticing. He was really engaging with the crowd, and especially seemed to be going after some of those cougar ladies.
The younger
guy, and he was playing it up with them.
Yeah. There was a grandma that he was really going in on. Yeah. Whenever he finds out somebody's got their tubes tied, or. Or, you know, yeah.
Girl, we gonna have a good time.
Yeah, he really cuts up. I will send you some Club Chantel just because it's funny. And he calls himself a fuck boy. There's one thing where he's like, my looks just came over the last couple of years. Can you imagine I had to develop a personality all those years for nothing? Now I don't even need a personality.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
He is a handsome guy too. So do you use comic relief in the middle of slicing and dicing and cutting up folks?
I have. It depends on the story I'm telling. If I'm telling a fun story, I have no problem throwing a little comedic absurdity into the middle of the mayhem. Mm-hmm. But if I'm telling something really heavy or extreme, I don't do a lot of extreme horror. But when I do, it's real heavy, and so it's just bleak. There's no humor to it whatsoever, and I don't think it would work with it. But there's other times, you know, where you're having a good time, and it's kind of like we're enjoying Tarantino splatter. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to laugh with that, you know, and that's a good place to insert some comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason you decided to get more into the splatter punk type of horror?
That was actually by accident. When I started, I just wanted to write Chris Miller stories, and those stories happened to be horror, suspense, mostly suspense, but they would add some horror into them and maybe have some crime drama involved, things of that nature. And I ended up early on hooking up with a handful of other writers that were into more extreme stuff. So I dabbled in that some, and then I started getting known for being an extreme horror author for a couple of my novels that came out. And I'm looking at I'm like, this is not an extreme novel. There's small portions of the book that go extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But the book as a whole, I'm talking about a 600-page epic. And it's overall not something I would consider extreme. But that's who started picking it up.
Yeah.
Traditional horror audience is who it was written for, but it's the extreme people that picked it up. And for whatever reason, I mean, I don't care as long as somebody's buying it, but I don't consider myself an extreme author. I just consider, I write Chris Miller stories. Sometimes they're going to be any genre you choose. I've even written literary stuff, you know? So, but I like to have fun with splatter. Splatter's so much fun.
Can you tell us what splatterpunk is exactly for our listeners who this is probably the first time they've heard splatterpunk for some people? Sure. What is that? Yeah, that
genre. Okay, so a lot of people consider splatterpunk and extreme horror to be the same thing. They are not. Extreme horror is about taking the violence, the depravity, sex, violence, gore, all that kind of stuff to an extreme, to a gross out extreme for its own sake. That doesn't necessarily mean you don't have a story also, but its point is to hurt you. Where with splatterpunk, you'll have a lot of the same elements, but you can also have a lot of humor injected into it or sociopolitical commentary injected into it. The Drive-In by Joe R. Lansdale is a perfect example of splatterpunk. It is absolutely absurd, hilarious, and utterly gory and depraved all at once. Mm. You know, and mm-hmm. And so if you don't know what splatterpunk is, go read The Drive-In by Joe R. Lansdale. That's the blueprint for it. So,
or go watch Terrifier.
But they're not the same. They're not the same. Too many people lump them together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say Terrifier as far as a movie is splatterpunk.
And see, I might lean more towards extreme on that. At least the first one. The second one now, when we start getting into the I don't want to spoil it for people, but the superhero stuff, that felt more splatterpunk. You know, that was fun. But yeah. The first one, God, that was mean. That one girl that she was kind of your main character. I'm going to keep hitting this microphone. I'm sorry. let me back up a little and show my bod some. Anyway, I got a dad bod. I got to show it off.
Hey.
So I'm talking about Terrifier 1. That girl, and she gets, like, shot in the face, right? But she's still alive. And she's sitting
there hilarious.
Agonizing, horrifying pain. And he goes around digging through this bag and he's just taking his time. And while it should be kind of funny, it's not at all to me.
It's hilarious to me.
I was cracking up.
I was laughing. I was like, this
second one too.
Horrifying thing. This poor woman sitting here dying slowly while this guy's figuring out his weapon.
The second one was even, I laughed all the way through it. You know that scene?
I guess that movie could kind of cross genres there a little bit. But for me, it was more extreme.
Yeah.
It hurt. And that poor chick getting split. I mean.
Yeah.
It was a whole new meaning to the term split tail.
I did see it as extreme horror, but that's because I'm not really familiar with what splatterpunk is, so I didn't think of it in terms of.
Yeah.
I know it's funny to me, but I don't know that I'm supposed to be laughing. You know, I always laugh at inappropriate times anyway.
Yeah, so, me too. I am Nicolas Cage. They got him in the eye, you know. And I'm cracking up.
I'm trying to think. What else? Like, what else are examples of splatterpunk, like in the movies or something?
In the movies, Hobo with a Shotgun comes to
Hobo
mind.
Hobo with a Shotgun.
Have you seen that? It's got Rutger Hauer, a handful of other people you probably recognize, but I can't think of their names.
Frankenhooker count?
I'm sorry.
Frankenhooker.
I have not seen that one.
Hmm.
But. Definitely Hobo with a Shotgun.
I consider it kind of like a comic book gore fest.
Yeah.
That's just over the top.
That's sort of what Hobo with a Shotgun's like. It's just this hobo riding a train comes into this city. It might be Detroit or it might be some made up city because it's obviously a fictional world, you know, an alternate universe. And it's just blood and depravity and murder and rape, everything, everywhere. And cops don't care. You know, nobody cares. And this hobo is watching all these terrible things happen, and they're so over the top in Tarantino fashion, even further than Tarantino, that you can't help but bust out laughing half the time. But then here comes the sociopolitical commentary with the hobo who has a conscience and a moral compass, and he gets himself a shotgun and starts taking the trash out, you know? And it's just absolutely glorious. I mean, there's a hand that comes off and there's just a spiky stump left and they're, you know, ramming it into people. I mean, there's all sorts of great moments in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Okay. Gotta check it out.
Nice. Well, from now on, I can see that I'm going to be analyzing, like, is this extreme horror or splatterpunk? You know, now that, I'm going to...
Does it have a political commentary? Does it have a whole lot of humor? Probably more splatterpunk.
Mm.
If okay. not, if it's just darker, more bleak, and more... That's probably more extreme horror.
Okay.
And I would even argue, I don't know that the masters would agree with me, but I would sit down and have a conversation with them, Brian Keene and Rath, if you're listening. But I don't think splatterpunk even has to be horror. Splatterpunk can be whatever. It's just got that splatterpunk element, you know?
Mm. Makes sense.
It could be bizarro. It could be, I did a cyberpunk novel called The Sons of Thunder, and I'm about to re-release it. It was released as a bundle with some other authors, and virtually nobody read it. So I'm going to be re-releasing that very soon. Mm-hmm. It's a cyberpunk, futuristic, dystopian, science fiction tale. I just did it again. Anyway,
you're just very, very like, woo.
Yeah, I'm very animated. I'm
Get
very
excited. Animated. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, bring yeah, that energy.
But... It's got that way over the top violence and blood splatter and tons of political commentary going on in this book, you know, about capitalism versus socialism versus, you know, what's good for the many, what's good for the few, things like that, you know, going on in the story. And it's absolutely batshit nuts. It's got some laugh out loud moments, you know, cyborgs with crazy attachments and stuff like this, but you know, there's heads popping by balloons. I even had a T-Rex show up. A T-Rex showed up. And it was awesome. It was awesome. Anyway, so.
So I imagine the fuck then, I didn't
see anything.
If you enjoy a particular author, is it because you, a particular author that's writing splatterpunk, is it because you can also deal with their political commentary? So are you not liable to enjoy it if you have differing political beliefs?
That doesn't usually bother me. I can break bread with anybody. I my whole family is very conservative and I'm not, and we get along fine. In fact, the area I live is extraordinarily conservative, and deeply Christian conservative, you know. But most of them are still good people, and I get along with them fine, and I can sit down and break bread. If they want to argue with me, I'll try to discuss it. But if it's getting out of hand, I'm like, you know what? The friendship's more important to me than being right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see things differently. If you're obviously not being hateful towards a person or group, and we just see things differently, that doesn't bother me.
So are you arguing both sides then in splatterpunk? Is it kind of divisive in political nature?
Oh, I would say there's a whole lot more left-leaning splatterpunk than there is leaning the other direction. Mm-hmm. I would say that in the horror community, or at least the indie horror community in general, that I've gotten to know over the last few years going to conventions and stuff. I've got my best friend. He is a staunch through and through conservative dude. And we have so many arguments, but we love each other at the end of the day. And, you know, and he goes to these things and he has to basically keep his mouth shut half the time because 99% of the people there would probably jump on him. Mm-hmm. Just for having a different opinion, you know, and I try to not, you know, out him too often, but you know, if he acts stupid, I'll tell him he voted for Trump. You should
watch him get jumped.
But I'm serious. Yeah. I mean, it's very, it's overwhelmingly to the left. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, in the writing itself, like when someone is picked up a book that has a lot of political leanings in it, are they going to be able to enjoy it if they have differing beliefs in the reading?
I think it has to do a lot with the author on each case, because some authors, I think I'm one, I try to show both sides of mm-hmm. what I'm talking about, and I try to present both sides fairly. Not just one is pure evil, one is pure good.
Gotcha.
You know, maybe they're both terrible, you right. know, and or maybe they both have their virtues. Mm-hmm. And I try to show those kind of things. And other authors that do that are the ones that I tried, that I enjoy the most, that I don't feel like they're preaching to me.
Right.
If you start mm-hmm. preaching to any audience, it's yeah. going to shrink. Mm-hmm. So I think it has more to do with the author than not. But most of the successful Spider-Punk books out there don't, to me anyway, feel real preachy. They're mm-hmm. just telling the story, and this happens to be a part of that story. You know, and sometimes that stuff is so far in the background of the story, you almost have to try to pick up on it. You know, it's not obvious in your face. It's just background noise almost. So
I did that with my new book coming out. I try to represent both sides as equally as I could.
So, Chris, you're going to be at Texas AuthorCon?
I am.
Okay, that's July 14th and 15th, so we'll be able to see you there.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, Chantel.
You're probably asking the same thing as me.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, was this your first time, or did you do last year's?
I was there last year.
Oh, awesome.
And I was at KillerCon last year in Austin. And I think that was the only two I did last year, plus the little local festival of books here in my small town of 3,500 people. So you can guess how much money I made. not much, but I try to hit a handful of these. I went to Lexington, Kentucky for Frightmare. Scarefest, not Frightmare. Yeah. And I see a bunch of my other writer buddies that are in, you know, a couple hundred mile radius, they're going up to the Scares of Care author cons up mm-hmm. in Virginia and stuff. I'd love to go, but that is a hell of a trip for me. That's a lot of money and shipping books and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't matter how many books I take, how many I sell, I'm going to lose money in the process. So I'm trying to hit stuff that's closer to home. You know, right. I can drive a couple hours and be there. Or, you know, an hour or 5 hours even, but 15, 20 hours.
Yeah. Somebody are they carpooling or something? Like maybe it's
some people do, but Eric Butler, who's going to be at Texas AuthorCon, I believe he drove to Scares of Care AuthorCon this past couple of months ago, by himself.
Mm.
And he lives, you know, somewhere here in the Dallas area. So that was a heck of a trip for him. He went by himself. It's not something I'd want to do.
Well, y'all could carpool maybe?
We could, but then I would be asking him to buy me snacks and gas. And, you know, I turn into a total bum when I'm carpooling with people. I try to hide in the back and you forget I'm there until we get there and I just hop out. Thanks for the ride, man.
Okay, I guess I'm trying to get you around, get you to more places. Y'all could swap off driving, maybe.
It's a thought. Patrick C. Harrison III also will be there at Texas AuthorCon, and he's one of my best friends. He's the one that voted for Trump. tell anybody, he's a good guy. He is a good guy, and he's a great writer. But we've been talking about maybe trying to carpool and get a table, but the tables sell out in like 4 minutes for that thing. Right. And I'm not going to go and walk around to meet people.
Right.
Oh, if I can get a table, I'm not going.
Yeah. Texas has a huge horror fandom.
Sure.
You have Dallas Frightmare. Uh-huh. Now the Houston Horror Film Fest. It's huge. I mean, we've got the same numbers as Dallas is having. Mm-hmm. So, and then you have some stuff that happens in San Antonio too. So, I mean, we have stuff here. We have plenty of bands.
Right.
Yeah. And those are the ones I'm trying to focus on more, especially local events. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I'm the guy from two towns over that's, you know, written something. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. You know, that's interesting to a lot of people. you know, and try to build a little bit of a fan base that way. But
of course, how long have you been writing, Chris?
I've been writing since I was probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old. But I only started publishing in 2017.
Okay. What made you decide to make that leap in 2017?
I was recently divorced for the first time.
First? Are you planning another?
I am twice divorced now.
Okay.
I'm okay. I suck at that part. But anyway,
most people do.
Yeah. She wasn't any good either. But so I can't believe I said that online. Anyway,
I'm not taking it out.
I was recently divorced, and I started writing on this old novel that I had that was, I don't know, 77,000-80,000 words, and it was the first thing I'd ever written. I'd never written a short story, for God's sake. You know, I wrote a novel first, and I looked at it, and I was like, okay, it's got its moments. I like the idea, but there's a lot of problems here, you know, and I just kept rewrote that thing 8 times. I have never rewritten anything that many times again since, but that first one I did, and it evolved, and it ended up over 100,000 words when I was done, and that was called A Murder of Saints, and that came out in September of 2017, and I just hit the ground running after that, started pumping out as much content as I could.
How many do you have out now?
I think I've got 11 books out now. There's a novella or two, a collection, three collections actually, if you want to think about it. But one's been unpublished. It's the one. It had my novel in it, but it was with other authors. Mm-hmm. And it was I was part of a group called Cerberus. I still am, I guess. It's me, Mike Innenbach, and Patrick C. Harrison III. And we wrote, we just all live with close enough together that we were able to get together once in a while and hang out. And we came up with the idea we wanted to write a book together. We're going to write a bunch of novelettes, 3 novelettes each. Each one of us would come up with an idea. Mike came up with Cabin Fever. Patrick came up with Letters. And then I came up with Chaos. Mm-hmm. Then Mike wrote a poem for his prompt, Cabin Fever. Patrick wrote one for his. I wrote one for mine. And then we each wrote one novelette for each category. Mm-hmm. And that one, I swear to God, it's one of the best books that nobody's read.
A handful of
people have read it, don't get me wrong. And it was nominated for 2 Splatterpunk Awards.
Okay.
And you know, people really liked it. It's just not that many people read it.
Yeah.
Enough people reading it that wanted to nominate it. So we came back with Cerberus Exploitation. And instead of doing short stories, this time we did novels. And literally nobody picked it up. So that's why we unpublished it ultimately. Patrick's already put his novel out independently. And I'm going to put mine out. And I assume Mike will eventually. So we had some of those, but yeah, I've got like 11 books out, I think. Most of them are novels. Mm-hmm. I like the longer form. I'm better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it comes to short work, I'm better at writing a novelette than I am a short story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Gotcha. If someone was going to start with your work, what would you recommend they read first?
If you are into horror, if that's what you're looking for, The Damned Place. Start there. It's it meets Stranger Things in the 90s. And so that's a really long one. It's a big honking novel, but it reads extremely fast paced. Look at the reviews. Don't believe me. And that one has a sequel called The Damned Ones. And then my splatter western, Dust, it had to be a standalone novel when I was invited to do it, but it ended up actually being part 3 of that series. And not a prequel. It happens in 1879, The last two books happened in 1990 and 2016. This is a continuation.
Okay.
You have to read it to figure it out.
Okay.
So, but if you're more into thrillers and things like that, I would recommend Dubtown Blues or Trespass. And if you like your batshit crime thrillers, get The Hard Goodbye, which is out of print at the moment. But you might find some used copies out there. I'm in the process of working on getting that one a second edition. So,
nice. Do you write sex scenes?
I have written a few. I hesitated for a long time because I didn't think I would be able to quit giggling. To be completely honest, I'm like, I'm talking about peppers and so anyway, I didn't think I could do it, and I had written a couple of really terrible, not terribly written, but like horrifying rape scenes in some extreme stories I did early on, but that's not a sex scene. That's a completely different thing. In The Sons of Thunder, which is that cyberpunk book that'll be coming out again shortly, there is a very hot and heavy sex scene in there. And not only is there virtually not any in most of my other work, this one like takes it to an 11. It gets straight up pornographic. And then for the initial release, I cut a bunch of that down. I was trying to get the word count down. So I pulled little parts out of here. And for the re-release, I'm calling it a director's cut. Cause we wrote it like we were writing grindhouse movies of the 70s and stuff. And, I put it all back in there. And I just like, let's get wet and sticky. let's enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah, Chantel, did you want to interject anything before I started talking again?
Before she takes over? No, I'm enjoying hearing about all this. I'm definitely excited to hear that you... It's really funny to me to hear you say that you are a story, like a novelist, before you were a short story author. Mm-hmm. And that's really great. What were your influences? Like, what were you reading and stuff?
My earliest influences were... I forget the name. Is it Franklin Smith that wrote the Hardy Boys novels? Whoever that guy was, the Hardy Boys. I grew up reading a bunch of that, and then I discovered R.L. Stine. Luckily, I discovered Fear Street before I discovered Goosebumps. I enjoyed Goosebumps. They're fun, but Fear Street was a whole lot more mobetta, or you know, however you say that. I just put myself into a grammatical corner. I had to fight my way out of. But, I loved the Fear Street series, and one of my friends had a copy of Skeleton Crew. Now my parents, like I said again, very Christian conservative, and didn't allow me to watch anything that wasn't PG or G. I couldn't read anything I just wanted to, so I had to sneak this. You know, I had to put it in the backpack, keep it underneath the math book and everything, and sneak into my room to read, but I read Skeleton Crew. No, I'm sorry. It was Night Shift.
I was thinking.
And that was my introduction to Stephen King. And of course, it was all short stories, and I was just blown away. I was like, man, this is amazing. So fast forward a few years. I'm still reading a bunch, but I'm reading Tom Clancy. I'm reading James Patterson. I'm reading thrillers. I'm reading all these other things, and I look up and I realize, hey, I'm 18. I can buy what the fuck I want now. So I went to the bookstore and I picked up a copy of Black House by Stephen King and Peter Straub, but I didn't realize it was a sequel to The Talisman when I bought it. And I didn't realize it was a sequel until I got to the end of the book. You know, it was one of those stories that kind of stood alone for the most part. There was a couple of things I was like, huh? But for the most part, I just thought it was a great story. I loved that one. And I started going through his catalog. I wore it out. I read a bunch of Dean Koontz, Clive Barker. I really get into he impresses me because he basically writes extreme horror really extreme horror. And I'm not talking about, you know, sort of, you know, fluffed up version. It's extreme, but it is accessible to the masses. And yeah. and I don't know anybody else can do that.
Yeah.
You know, Ed, yeah, Lee, Ed Lee's a great extreme horror author.
Yeah.
But he's not going to sell worldwide like Clive Barker is. That's just not going to happen.
I've been so confused by that, because I remember early on loving Dean Koontz. Like, he was the one that terrified me. I was scared when I read one of his stories, but he wasn't the one that, like, Stephen King is the one that gets all the glory. Like, that's the one.
And they talk about Stephen King being super prolific. I'm sorry, Dean Koontz has probably written twice as many novels.
Yes. How did that happen, though? How many
10 names? You know? Yeah. And now he just releases them all under Dean R. Koontz or whatever he does. But yet but Koontz, though, his he had a mastery of suspense.
Yes, yes.
He could just get your asshole puckered up and it would not release.
Yeah.
It would not release until it was all done. And then you're like, oh my God. And you're really thankful you were near a toilet. Because that guy, get under my skin. I'm freaking out. And I'm like, there's no way these people are getting out of this situation. And I'm just like, while I'm reading. And it was amazing. and King is really good at suspense too. But he's more subtle with the suspense and he builds it slower. Koontz just bam, bam, bam. That hit me in the face.
Yeah. So. I remember. I've always wondered how that happened. But I looked it up while you were talking. The Hardy Boys, because it's been so long since I read any of those. Franklin W. Dixon was the collective
Dixon. Okay.
Yeah, name that they wrote. I mean, there was a lot of different ghostwriters and names, but that's the one. Like, even here, there is a... I don't know if you can see that. Oh, well, this is one of the covers. Forget it. It doesn't look like it's coming.
I just say,
The Tower Treasure. I know it doesn't look like it's coming in very good, but Franklin W. Dixon. Yeah.
I loved a lot of those books. They were a lot of fun. Yeah. For kids, anyway.
Yeah. So we were talking about the posters behind you. You have Sin City. What's up with that bookshelf back there, though? That bookshelf.
Okay, so I haven't been living here too long. And by too long, I mean I've been here since the end of December, but I'm a dude. I'm going to have them filled with a lot of books that are in boxes down here that you can't see sort of behind me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we can see some of them.
Just haven't got, you can see some that, you know, they don't all have books, but most of them are full of books. And I'm going to load those up one of these days. You know, it's like trying to find motivation. It's like trying to find God. You know, where do you look? And so, but it'll happen one of these days.
Yeah. You know what? Recently I was paying attention to people that are talking about like moving abroad, because that's something that's been on my radar, you know, maybe over the next couple of years. So just tossing around some ideas. But one person explained that if you're planning to move abroad, the first thing you need to start doing is decluttering. You need to get rid of everything. You need to start downsizing all of your things and get rid of, you're not taking all those clothes, you're not taking your furniture, you're not taking your cars, you know, those sorts of things. And I looked around, I was like, I could get rid of that. I could get rid of that. I could get rid of that. And I got to the books on my bookshelf. And I got a real problem now. I got a real problem. I got books everywhere in my house. My kids got a whole section of books up here too. We have shelves everywhere in every room, it seems. Mm-hmm. And I am very attached. Like, those are sentimental to me. I have some of my books that I read when I was little that I saved for my kids to be able to read. The Sweet Valley High Girls, you know, like all the stuff, the Land of Oz, and they did read them. I mean, it was so old that it was kind of dry, rotten, and falling apart. I don't know how to detach from my doggone book. That is a collection that I've been having.
I still got a copy of The Hunt for Red October by Tom Clancy that I found in a magazine rack in my parents' house. You know, they had they had a few things like, you know, a book of anatomy, which I loved to look at when I was younger. And then there's, you know, just a handful of the Time, you know, some other things. And then there's this random copy of The Hunt for October. And it's like a first edition mass market paperback. It's old. It doesn't have any of the movie stuff on it. It came out before the movie did. And that's where I read Hunt for October for the first time. Well, now the book literally has scotch tape all over it to hold it together. And I still have it. I cannot let that go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I moved here from North Carolina in 2002, I moved from North Carolina to Houston. I remember someone had come to my house and I had all these bookshelves up. They were like, why did you bring all these books? What's up with this? And I drove them over in a U-Haul. All the boxes of books that I had, I brought them over, and I didn't bring much else, but yeah. I brought my books. So I'm going to have some problems with that. Yes, I have a Kindle and I got thousands of books on there too, but my paperbacks and my hardbacks, that's something different, you know.
I'm an audiobook person. Most of what I consume is through audiobook in the car. I have a Kindle. I read on that some, and I read physical books some too. But over 95% is probably Audible, and it inspired me. I've got virtually all my stuff on Audible too. Most of it.
Oh, and, good.
Anyway, you know, even though I have that. When I really love a novel, I have to go and find a hardcover of it. And I want to put that on my shelf, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm never going to open. I'm not going to read it. If I want to reread the book, I'll go listen to the audiobook again. But I like having it there.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe it's vain. Maybe it's stupid. I don't know. But I like it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how I want to spend my money.
Yeah. And in more recent years, it's been a thing to get them autographed from the author.
I have a autographed copy of Cold Heart Canyon by Clive Barker. And I got it for $5. I didn't know what they had.
Yeah.
It's signed by Clive.
That was somebody probably telling them to get rid of their collection too. Yeah. Like people would be telling. Yeah.
It's like pristine condition, you know?
Yeah. Oh, nice. Wow.
So the sooner he's dead, I've got some money hanging around. not that I want you to die, Clive. Stick around.
Don't put your mouth on Clive now.
Hashtag Clive Barker.
No, live forever, Clive. You're awesome.
Oh, no. Chris, I want to get messy.
Oh, boy.
We don't always get messy. You know, I kind of go with the vibe of the person that we are interviewing. And if they stay serious, then I stay serious, you know.
Right.
But you kind of give me a little, you know, you even gave me a little bit to hang on a minute ago. So I want to circle back to that. You said you've been married twice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's the deal? What's going on with that?
That bitch is crazy.
That's the messy I was looking for.
My first ex-wife, actually, we get along great. And she's mother of two of my children. And, you know, I don't know. I was young. We got married when I was like 24, something like that. And she was even younger than that. And just didn't last. And I got remarried too fast. I was divorced and then remarried within 9 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I met somebody like right as I got divorced and just ran with it.
Rebound.
And she's the mother of one of my children. But, you know, we had some very fundamental differences. So that didn't last either. And so now... I've moved recently into a new place and
recently 10 months ago.
Yeah. 10 months ago. I don't think I'm good at marriage. I'm good at romance and I'm good at the dating part. I just don't know if I'm good at marriage.
So what do you think the breakdown is then? Okay. I know you said that Okay, so you said that it was because you were young for the first one, and the second was because it was too fast and you didn't have enough time to heal or, you know, whatever, or grow or whatever you need
and, to have. Or get to know her fully, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so each other, rather, I should say.
So that's not the same thing as not being great at marriage, though, right? Because if one is because you're just young and you still needed some growing, and one is because it was too soon, that's not necessarily saying that if I had the right person that I took my time with and that I would be great at it.
Sure. And I guess that's possible, but I'm also very wary of trying it again.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
You know what I mean? I'm 40. I really don't want to go through this shit again.
Mm-hmm.
It's exhausting. It is expensive. And my blood pressure may not take it. So
I gotcha.
I'm just trying to chill.
Okay. Yeah. Do you ever put any of that into your books?
Oh, sure. I put some of the good times that were had, not just with the two women I was married with, but other ladies that I've known over the years. I've drawn from some of that, but I've also drawn from some of the bad stuff too, to try to show a real breakdown of a relationship, and the very complicated feelings people can have. Like, love and hate are not opposites. A lot of people think they're opposites. They're not. You can love somebody and absolutely hate their fucking guts at the same time, and almost want to just strangle them. And trying to wrap your head all the way around all those emotions, especially in the moment, is nigh impossible. The human brain doesn't want to think that way. It wants to think an easy little cutout. Well, this is how I feel here, and this is how I feel here. When you've got all these things coming together like you do in a relationship, you're feeling all sorts of things. And you're trying to sort through all those things to come to a rational and healthy mindset, and it's extremely difficult to do, and not everybody succeeds at it.
Okay. Do you ever kill them in your stories?
Oh yeah.
This isn't a therapy session. I'm trying to get messy.
Long gone.
All right, Chantel, take it away.
I'm just enjoying this conversation. Hey, man, I've got 10 years on you, and I'm just going to tell you, fuck it. Just enjoy your life. Don't do that shit no more.
Right.
Trust me, I'm on my second, and if this one is ever over, that's it.
I swore with the first one, this doesn't work, I'm done. And then on the second one, if this doesn't work, I'm done. And that's kind of what I'm still saying, but it's like, who knows? You never say never. You know, the right person comes along, like you said. I mean, who knows? I don't know. But maybe I'll be better at it. I'm definitely more chill now than I used to be. Just need to find somebody that's not batshit insane. That's what I'm looking for. Not batshit insane. That's the headline. If you want me, start there.
I thought batshit insane meant fun and interesting, like not boring.
I wouldn't call it boring. I would also not call it fun and interesting. we're talking about guano here, batshit.
You know, I don't know. I mean, you're in Texas.
Red, but you know, that's the insanity factor there. It was no fun either. So, no, I wouldn't call it. I wouldn't call it fun.
Well, here in Houston, we have an extreme population of not just Hispanic people, but Mexican people from Mexico. And one of the most popular things you will see on the back of a vehicle in Houston, and I can't even say it right, but it's basically, I'm married to a crazy bitch, or I'm with a crazy bitch. And it's just like their favorite. I forgot, Toxica something, Esposa y Toxica, or something like that.
So is it in Spanish?
Yes.
Not in English?
No.
Okay.
But basically it's like, I want this crazy bitch. This is what I want in my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it just depends on the culture.
There's aspects to crazy bitches that are very attractive. Don't get me wrong. That's probably why I married them. But you know, there's also some very toxic elements to some of it. You got to find the right crazy bitch. If you get the wrong crazy bitch,
toxic,
it's going to be crazy. And it's going to be bitchy. You're not going to have the fun part.
Look, let me see your scars.
My scars?
Yeah, did you get scars from the crazy bitches?
Well, no, I got blown up earlier this year. There's some burn marks.
Okay, but, well, then you didn't have a real crazy bitch.
Yeah, well, I've had black eyes before and things like that, but...
Unless you got stabbed?
I've never been stabbed. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to get stabbed. But I didn't.
Not the black eyes.
Huh?
You said black eyes?
No.
Black eye?
Oh, a black eye. Yeah, I got a...
What'd you think I said? I'm sorry.
I was like thinking of a demon with black eyes. It wasn't quite that bad. You know? But no, yes, I have ended up getting smacked and, you know, ended up with some discoloration around my eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, well, I feel like I shouldn't laugh at that, okay? I put it out there already that I laugh at inappropriate times, but I'm...
It's funny now. I'm a big fat 40-year-old getting knocked around by 105-pound women, yeah.
I don't want to be insensitive to any trauma you might have experienced from that.
No, after we get off here, I'm going to go and have a good cry. You're good.
Sorry. There was another time when we had a guest on, Chantel, and I thought about it, and it's been 4 years now, I think, since we had that guest. And I still think about how we laughed at something that he said. And I wonder if I was not supposed to laugh. Like, maybe he was really traumatized from it. It still bothers me to this day.
Do you need to reach out?
No.
I mean, he could be hanging in a garage somewhere right now.
He was like,
"Do you know what you're doing?"
He's like, "Those bitches at the Sex and Horror Podcast are cold."
I'm pretty sure he's okay.
You need to make an anonymous phone call to 911.
I'm pretty sure he's okay, but it's just one of those things that just kind of bothers me that I should have said something, you know, like we were laughing. I'll tell you about it later, Chantel, because I don't want to bring his name up now. But I just thought about it, and every once in a while it'll come back. Like, man, I shouldn't have laughed. Like he may have been traumatized by that.
Y'all see what I'm doing here, right?
I said.
My heart bleeds.
All that night,
Chantel says she don't care. Well, there is that. We do like to torture men here, but at the same time,
but not just in bad ways.
There's all sorts of good torture. I love these. Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I got two nipples that'll speak for that. Give me some torture.
Oh, okay. You got nipple piercings?
No. Just twist on them a little bit. You know, go nuts.
Oh, okay. Have you been in one of those cock rings? You know.
Yes.
Really? Can you tell
us? I was going to say no, but yeah, I did it.
Okay. Can you tell us about that experience? No names, you know, I don't want you to be like, take that down because I told
you. I felt choked a little bit and not necessarily a great way either. Nice. Maybe it was too small. I don't know. I just, you know, it's like when they tie off a balloon at the bottom, you know, how it's all bulbous and then all of a sudden there's just... That's how I felt. You tying off my balloon. And I'm ready to pop. You know?
I'm sitting up here. I forget that I'm on camera too, because I'm sitting up here trying to imagine that. I don't know what my face looks like.
I really don't think, I mean, that was a pretty good visual, I think you
could. Yeah, I'm trying to hide.
Yeah,
hide my facial expression since I'm on camera. Okay, so. Now, is this there is the cock ring, like, at the bottom, but there's also, like, the lock box. Did you do the lock box where they lock it, where you can't?
Okay, I don't guess so.
To prevent the erection, you know?
No, like, no, nothing like that.
Okay, I can't
even think. He's not into that much torture.
No, no, but I'm in the kink, so I'll do, you know, until I get to the point where I'm like, wow, this is not fun, I'll keep going.
So... Is that why you identify with the Clive Barker style, you know, his writing?
Maybe he taps into some serious eroticism,
mm-hmm.
that and it's intense too. And whether he's talking about heterosexual or homosexuals,
mm-hmm.
together, it's still hot. And I'm, mm-hmm. I'm a straight guy, and I still think, I'm like, God, this guy really knows how to turn the heat up.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so I think it's like kind of that, and being brought up in the very conservative area and home and everything, and having that curiosity and stuff, it sparks something in me that, you know, I'm like, oh, that wicked curiosity. I want to know more about this, just because I know it's supposedly wrong.
Yeah.
Or depraved or whatever. It's alluring.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is something that's easier to explore with strangers or with people that you're in a committed relationship with? You know, like you're the ex-wives, like, would you explore those things with them, or would it need to be someone you don't really have any connection with?
I think it's, for me, and this is not going to be everybody, but for me, it would probably need to be somebody I've got more of a connection with.
Mm-hmm.
I need to come out of my shell some,
mm-hmm.
you know, if that makes sense. Even if you're being intimate with somebody, if you don't know them real well on a personal level, it's hard to completely be free with them in that setting,
mm-hmm.
for me. So for me, it would need to be somebody that I've gotten to know over time and feel more comfortable with, and like I feel safe with.
They right.
feel safe with me, and we can, you know, experiment.
So. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, because bitches be crazy.
Bitches.
That, well, you know, if you're going to explore in those areas, more than likely they're going to be crazy.
Right. That's one of the good parts of the crazy bitch. You got to get the right crazy bitch. That's the thing.
Yeah. We should make t-shirts that say that. Are you the right crazy bitch?
Are you the right crazy bitch? We need to get some of those for Texas AuthorCon. Somebody get Joe Garcia on the horn and tell him to start making shirts. Those will sell out, I guarantee.
Yeah, nice. You're going to have to do something different than Super Mario. That's what you have on your shirt right now. Super Mario 5,
the original.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good if you're attracting the nerdy girls. There's lots of cutesy nerdy girls out there.
Yeah, yeah.
The nerd, you know, the nerd.
There's a lot of nerdy girls who are also crazy bitches.
Yeah.
Well, the nerd thing is like a huge thing that a lot of people, it's like a huge, I don't know, market's the right word, but a movement, then people really give it credit. Like Dragon Con has just grown tremendously, and it's just basically this convention for just hardcore nerds, meaning they love their gaming, they love their comic books, they are in like that, they are saturated in that stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I definitely dig my nerds. Most of my friends are nerds, even if they try to pretend like they're not. And Patrick C. Harris III, I don't know if you're going to have him on here. You should. But
we met him.
He tries to present himself very professionally. Don't buy any of that shit. he's the nerdiest guy. He's got what we call it, the war room, his garage. And he's got over 17 or 1,900 books out there. And okay, that's not nerdy enough. So here's what he did. He then made an Excel spreadsheet, putting every book he owned in this spreadsheet in alphabetical order and numbering them so that he knew what he had. And that's, I'm like, great. I don't give a shit what I have. I'm not going to spend that time.
Really? You know, he just had nothing to do that day.
But no, yo, he's an uber nerd. Don't let him sell you anything else, because he'll try to play it all cool with his cigar and his scowl. Total nerd.
Oh, no. When he met us at Texas Frightmare, I feel like that we brought that nerd out immediately. Like, oh, he good. Was just like, good, he was good, like good. His little bow tie, like, hi, nice to meet you.
He'll try it in an interview. He'll try to act like he's a professional. Fuck that.
we would have had one of those very business-like meetings with the interviews with him then.
No, yeah.
Probably wouldn't have went into the cock ring or nothing.
you get a little Jameson in him and he comes alive.
Well, hopefully you guys will be able to pop in when we do our recording, our live recording there at Texas.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I am notoriously forgetful, so if you have somebody that can, you know, shoot something at the back of my head and remind me.
We're going to bring you up to model the cock rings.
Shoot me a cock ring and I'll be there. I know what this is all about.
Yeah, that's a good way to segue on out of here.
Segue out of the conference. See ya.
Chris, tell everyone where they can find your books and where to find you in social media or anything else you'd like to plug.
All right. You can find me at authorchrismiller.com. There is a tab for books. Taking everything I got on Amazon. You can also find me on godless.com. There is an exclusive series there called the Merchant Series, kind of a 50s noir meets Lovecraftian horror, funny, splattery mystery stuff. A series of short stories on there. For now, it's only on Godless, and it's only like 50 cents to 75 cents a story. I'm going to charge you a lot more when it ends up on Amazon, so go get it on Godless right now. Obviously look me up on Amazon, Facebook. If you're not a total creeper, I'll add you. I'm on Twitter at cmwordslinger.com. You know, I don't know what else to say.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's great.
Go goggle me. Goggle me and you'll find a bunch of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And come see
him at Texas AuthorCon, guys. Be there. We're going to be there. What is it? July 14th and 15th.
14th,
15th,
I believe.
Yep. Yes. All right. See you then, Chris. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.